It is a historic day around the world. President Trump has met with is meeting with Kim Jong-un. He is in Singapore, and we wanted to get someone on to talk about this because President Trump has done something that other presidents have not done. Joining us tonight is Professor Tom Mikaitis. He's a professor of history at DePaul University, where he teaches courses in British, modern European, and military history. And if you want to find out more about what he writes about, please follow him on Twitter at Dr. Mikaitis. That's DrMokaitis. And Dr. Mikaitis joins us on the line. Hey, Dr. Mikaitis, how are you doing?
Good evening.
I know that you probably want to get back to the coverage on this and find out what the fallout is or what has transpired. Tell people why this is so historic. I mean, some people just kind of, this is background noise to them and they don't understand it at all.
Well, I'm not sure any of us understand it because it's highly unusual. Typically, when you are trying to resolve a major crisis like this and actually end a conflict that is more than 60 years old, there's a lot of proximity talks, and those lead up to direct negotiations, all of which is done behind closed doors. And the leaders normally don't get together for the handshake until they're ready to actually sign an accord. But the most recent example I can think of is Yitzhak Rabin and Yasser Arafat under Bill Clinton meeting with a big handshake, at the White House. But then the deal was already done, and that was the big formality. In this case, there is no deal. And that, I think, is both interesting but also problematic, and that is that managing the very high expectations for this is going to be a real challenge.
Well, that was something that President Trump seemed to be doing ahead of time, saying things like, I'm going to know right away, or I'll be able to tell by his body language. What were your thoughts when you saw President Trump tweeting out like that or making statements in regards to the summit?
I'm really concerned about not only his lack of preparation for this, but his unwillingness to prepare. There's almost in this administration a willful disregard of expertise. The idea that I'm the deal maker, I just have to go in, I read people really well, I'll assess the situation, and we'll figure out whether we can do anything from there. I hope it is just, the normal kind of bravado that precedes a lot of his meetings. But we will see. It's not clear anything concrete will come from this. It's certainly not going to be the case that you're going to have a fully developed, hammered out agreement, or it would be very unlikely. Let me put it that way. I mean, it's always possible they've already worked something out, but I doubt that.
And when, I'm not sure if you saw the opening moments, of course, it was more of a photo op when they sat down across a table from each other. I wanted to ask you, what were your thoughts when President Trump said it was an honor to meet him? Should it be an honor to meet a dictator?
Well, both of these men really like theater. We have to, I think, keep in mind that their real audiences are their bases in an odd sort of way. So, and the president likes superlatives. So, he's very much into this kind of dramatic use of language. It is a problem, just as it was a problem for him to call, to congratulate Vladimir Putin on his, election victory when it was clearly not a fair contest at all. So, it's a concern, but I think it'll be judged more importantly by whether or not there is any outcome from the meeting. And if it's successful, I don't think anybody will be too concerned with that particular comment.
Well, in those opening moments, he also said, we'll be able to work this out. And working this out, he has said his goal, President Trump has said his goal is complete denuclearization of North Korea. Does that seem as though it's achievable?
Well, I think if it's going to be extremely difficult, it would take a long time, and it'll be a challenge to verify. I think the real issue here is, what is the deal breaker for each of them? The president wants complete denuclearization. Kim Jong-un wants an end to sanctions. Now, the real challenge, I think, is the president going to insist that there will be no lessening of sanctions before there's complete denuclearization, or will we see a gradualism on both sides, that there will be a measured gradual reduction in the sanctions regime as there are demonstrable steps towards denuclearization? If it's an all or none kind of thing, then I think this could end up being a very short meeting that will accomplish very little. Otherwise, I think all it will really do, if it's successful, is it will create a framework for further negotiations. Quite possibly the really important discussions are happening away from the main meeting by their, by both sets of experts. And there's been some groundwork done before this. It's just not entirely clear, you know, exactly how this is going to play out.
There have been diplomatic efforts in the past. And afterwards, you know, North Korea has said, oh, we'll do this, we'll meet you part of the way, or we'll agree to something. Right. And then afterwards, they will have some big missile display or do a test. Is there, you know, this is the first time we've met face to face. What do you think would be the, you know, sort of the out, the fallout if after saying, oh, well, you know, we've met with you, we've agreed to things, and then they go back to kind of reneging on that?
Well, it would be, it would certainly sour future relations for a long time. But the issue is that I think the president is very, very leery of any suggestion that he might be played. So I think that's going to be the challenge, because if he is, even if they release the sanctions a little bit and get nothing in return for it, you know, he will not look good, and that will not sit particularly well with him, which is why, you know, you may get, you know, you may not get any progress until they can then work out that particular stumbling block, or some things may be done quietly and so on. But you're right, there was something close to a deal under President Clinton. It didn't progress very far. At that time, it was to replace reactors that, you know, could enrich uranium with an alternative. You know, they hadn't yet developed a nuclear capability, but obviously they did very quickly afterwards. So yes, there's a distrust on both sides as to whether the other, and you know, to be perfectly fair, I think this is difficult for Americans perhaps to recall and maybe to hear, is Kim Jong-un has every reason to say, well, can I trust you? Look what you did on the Iran deal. You know, you, the United States reached an agreement and you just reneged on it, even though the, all the other signatories have agreed that Iran is complying with the terms of the agreement. So I think there's a lot of distrust to be overcome by both sides.
What are your thoughts when people say, look, finally, you know, this is something that President Obama was not able to accomplish, was a sit down with Kim Jong-un. Is this something that President Obama should have done when the leader of North Korea and his father and his grandfather all had wanted to sit down with American presidents?
Well, the question is, a sit down just for a sit down, it may not be a good idea if all the dictator is doing is looking for a good photo op, which may in fact be the case here. The thing is, both of these leaders are going to try and spin this. Now, of course, anything that Obama did is anathema to this president. So to say that Obama should have done this, I think he only should have done it if there was a real prospect of it advancing the cause of peace. And at the time, I don't think there was. We'll see if there is this time. But that brings up another point. Both of these leaders are going to spin this meeting to suit their own domestic needs. President Trump is already saying, see, my tough stance and my bellicosity, you know, intimidated them and forced Kim Jong-un to come to the bargaining table. Kim Jong-un is saying, see, I am now a recognized, respected player on the world stage. The Korean flag, North Korean flag is right next to the American flag. I got the American president to come to Asia and sit down with me. And to a certain degree, they may both be right, and it may be nothing more than that they, you know, they can say that to their base. You know, that's a real possibility. But, you know, this is going to be spin doctored by both sides quite a bit.
And I was also wondering this, by the way, again, we're talking to Dr. Mikaitis. He is a professor of history at DePaul University. For more about him and everything he writes, you can follow him on Twitter at DRMOCKAITIS. You know, this is not the same as President Reagan negotiating with the Soviet Union, a powerhouse, a huge international power. This is a small country. This is entirely because North Korea poses a global security threat, correct?
Well, it poses a regional security threat that could get out of hand. Although, you know, when you mention President Reagan, it's important to remember that the Reykjavik summit in Iceland was in fact a failure. And as soon as he came back from it, didn't achieve anything, President Reagan went right to an American military base and gave a very grand speech saying he had not sold out, of U.S. military or U.S. security. And, you know, again, that was another case of spin. But the real concern with North Korea, I don't take too seriously yet their ability to directly hit the United States. It's not really clear how effective they would be. They're a real serious threat, a very serious threat to South Korea, of course, and possibly to Japan. Now, the other thing is, of course, is China is a player behind the scenes in this big game. And they have a very definite interest in trying to keep this situation from not getting out of hand.
That was actually going to be my next question was, you know, because we are, you know, meeting with North Korea in Singapore, you know, what is the role of China in all of this?
I think China had some, you know, when Kim went to China and that sealed trade deal, after that is when things began to move. So I think China may have encouraged him to do this. Because China is not interested. It's very much counter to their goals in the region, have the United States ramp up its military presence. Even if it's not aimed at China, it could be seen as interfering with what China wants to do, which is to achieve hegemony in the South China Sea, control of the area inside the board, the islands running from the tip of the Aleutians through Curacao and Sakhalin down through, you know, Japan, the Philippines, and so on. They see that as their security perimeter, and they're interested in, you know, economic hegemony. And, you know, the last thing they want is an arms race in East Asia and an increase in American presence there. So they have a vested interest in this as well. On the other hand, we're antagonizing them with what is shaping up to look like some sort of trade war, which is very odd. I mean, why on the eve of the summit you would suddenly pick as the time to start threatening China with tariffs is a bit perplexing, and we'll see whether or not that interferes with the whole summit.
I know it's been a long day for you, Doctor. I want to thank you for your time, and I encourage everyone.
Happy to do it.
I appreciate it. Well, I will say this. You gave me two very good Scrabble words and one word I was never quite sure how to say, which is bellicosity. And the other one is hegemony. See, hegemony. Hegemony? See, I still don't have it.
Hegemony,
see?
For a crossword puzzle, you have to be able to spell them. You know, pronouncing
yes.
them is irrelevant.
I think. Well, I looked at bellicosity while you were talking. I was like, wait a minute. I'm pretty sure I know. Oh, it's warlike. Got it.
On that note,
yes. But I make that joke only because it is important for us to elevate both the language that we use and the way in which you understand this. So I make light of it only because I do really appreciate you sharing so much information with us and enlightening us. And I encourage people to follow you again at Dr. Mochaitis on Twitter. That's DrMochaitis, and he's also the editor of Small Wars and Insurgencies. So I thank you so much again, sir, for your time, and I know you have to catch up on all the news right now.
All right, you have a nice evening.
Thank you so much, sir. More after this. Okay. It's 720 WGN. Thank you so much for hanging out for the Patty V Show. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Michael, I'm in the works of already just getting used to not saying pretty late. I think it's time to just let it go. We have to say, Jen Zanotti joins me in studio. We have to let go of pretty late. Mm-hmm. Although, for those just joining
kinda
us.
Early, yeah.
Kinda early? No. we have a schedule change here on the show. I will be moving up to the 7 to 11 slot where Justin Kaufman had previously been hosting, and he is now joining the Steve Cochran Show as a contributor. Andrea Darlis will be joining me from 7 to 11. Now, I know a lot of people were upset about, I almost started crying. Esmeralda, I was just telling Es yesterday when we went to brunch at Knife and Tine yesterday, I really almost started crying last week when we were on the air and people were telling me how much they enjoyed the show at night. Es, are you getting any, no, people are worried about you. They're like, where's Es going? So can you tell everyone
right.
where you're going?
I'm going nowhere.
Exactly.
I mean, you're going someplace. In the same spot as always.
And I realized, now do you keep the door open in your traffic shack?
I do.
Okay. So I went to visit Violetta, who's the other one of the other traffic reporters. She says she has to keep the door open because if someone opens it while she's sitting there, the door hits her. That's how much smaller the traffic shack is compared to... Would you say about half the size of where you were or a third?
Yes.
Yes.
I would say in the new spot?
Yes.
It's pretty small.
Well, it's kind of funny. And so
it's cozy.
It's cozy. Well, what's funny is how much floor space there is in the traffic, in the newsroom. So,
yeah,
there's a lot of floor space.
So
it's just.
And a little tiny spot.
And she's just facing a window. Uh-huh. And, you know, she's got a nice view of the river. But right now.
Yeah, I think that's the exchange, or what do you call it?
Trade-off?
Trade-off.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Is that, you know, we get a view, while we're doing traffic.
That's
rather
the
than being more into the building, I guess we'd have more space, but then we wouldn't have a view.
Right. It's and I'll be right by you. I don't know what studio Andrea wants to work out of yet. I know that Nick has picked the bigger studio. We were trying to figure out ways because he does a lot of pre-records and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we're not actually going to be right on top of him as much, except when there are White Sox games. We are going from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m., which pretty much, Michael, next week is 4 nights out of 5.
Yeah, I saw that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So not too much, actually. I mean, I lose an hour. We'd be an hour shorter.
Yes.
I'm not trying to go with negatives here.
Right. Yeah, right. No, the positive.
Yes, positive. Yep. One less hour. Nick D will start at 1 a.m. every night. Is that including with Friday nights with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf?
I don't know.
Oh, nobody. Okay.
Well, I just looks know like, I'm 10 to 5. That's all I know.
That's just like, I just know my schedule.
Matt Bubala got from 1 until 5, I believe. So he moved up an hour as well.
Oh, look at that.
From the grapevine. I've heard that from the grapevine. So don't take my word for it.
The question from the someone's asking for the 773, who's in the 11 o'clock spot? So I have a really cool thing to tell you about at least the first 11 to 1, because it will be floating hosts and different shows. The very first 11 p.m. to 1 a.m., everybody. Is there a way to do a drum roll? Because I'm so excited about this. Some people already know this if they were listening to Steve Cochran's show this morning. The very first 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. show will be Steve and Johnny next Wednesday night. Yes,
oh,
I think that's amazing. Yes.
That is awesome.
So I have to tell you a secret. Don't tell anybody.
Wow. Okay.
So when they were in studio last week, I may have mentioned, I think that they were talking about talk, and I was like, what am I doing? I don't know. I'm not a business person. I can't be telling other hosts or people here. So I was so glad that they did call them and ask them to do the inaugural
awesome.
11 p.m. to 1 a.m. So outrageously excited about that.
Nice.
Yes. So next Wednesday night, Steve and Johnny, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. And you can catch them if you go to WGN's Facebook page. You can catch video of them this morning with Steve Cochran, with their last appearance in this studio in the Trip Tower. Aww. On Michigan Avenue. We're into the final five shows right now of the Pretty Late show. So I'm not going to introduce it as Pretty Late anymore, but we will talk about it already as in post-mortem.
So everything starts next Monday.
Next Monday.
New schedule.
Yes, new schedule starts next Monday. We will be on after the White Sox game.
Of course.
Presumably about this time.
Yes.
So they start around the same time.
So not too much of a change yet.
Not too much, except it'll be 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yes. So we will see how it works. More after this on 720 WGN. Kind of excited. There is a in the Nashville Children's Museum, there is a beehive that they have, and you can see it's leads to outside, and the bees go and they come back, and they're taken care of by this museum. And I've always heard that there are people who do this, and I've seen my friend Rick Geezer have photos of his son doing this. So he asked me, he's like, would you ever be interested in Ricky coming in and talking about being a beekeeper? And I said, how quickly did I say yes? About very quickly? They say very, very quick.
Very quick.
Yes, I said yes very quickly. But then he told me that Ricky Geezer was going off to the University of Illinois and he'd be living in the Allen Hall dorms. And I was like, we have so much to talk about, because that was my old dorm. Joining me in studio is Jen Zanotti, hanging out
Hello.
For Motivational Monday, and I am excited that someone was motivated to start beekeeping. Ricky, how did you get started in raising bees?
Well, really, this was 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I had to write an essay. It was like an open-ended, what do you want to do? Or it was like, you just do whatever, and just convince me on something. So I was like, what am I going to write? What am I going to write on? My mom had the news on, and it was saying that was when the species of bees in Hawaii were going endangered.
Right.
Like when they first put them on the list. And I was like, I'll write about bees. So from that, then I had to learn all about them, learn everything about it. And I was like, well, maybe I should start doing this. It seems pretty cool.
What part of it drew you to it as far as the idea that we do have that we are vulnerable if, bees become extinct or if they're endangered or if their population diminishes? Was that part of what drew you to it as well?
Yeah, partially. And what most people think of when they think of the bees, their population declining, they think about honeybees. But honeybees aren't even from North America. They're from Europe, they're from Asia, they're from Africa. The ones that we generally use are European because they're just what we use. But there are about 4,000 native bees in North America, native species. So even things just, you wouldn't think of it, but like bumblebees, mm-hmm. they're native to here. And they're little tiny ones, little down to millimeter sized. And most people don't realize that. And that was something that I learned about when I was writing the essay, was because I was researching it and I was like, there's so many different kinds that I didn't even know about. Like there's one called the blueberry bee, which it just goes to blueberry bushes. Like
incredible. And well, then if they go to the blueberry bushes, then are they pollinating? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're
so we need them. We need them for certain types of fruits, vegetables.
Exactly.
What kind of bees are you raising?
Well, I have a hive of honeybees at a friend's house, but I also have little houses on the front of my house for the native bees. And the native bees, they don't live in a hive. They don't live in a big colony. They just live alone. Some of them, like, they lay their eggs in a tube, like a reed or something, just laying on the ground. And they're called mason bees. And they're called mason bees because basically they do mason work. Like, they lay an egg in the tube, and they go grab wet mud from the ground, and they putty it up. And they just keep doing that, putting more and more chambers on there with eggs in it until it's fully used up. And the funny thing about it is that they put the males at the front of it because they're expendable.
I mean, we're not laughing. No. We're not laughing at that. But no, but the idea being that the girl bees have to keep producing eggs.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they're the important ones.
So they're building shelter for the eggs in order to protect them while they're waiting to hatch. Mm-hmm. So what made you decide to get the mason bees then? Is there a particular draw to them?
Well, it's partially just because they're native to here. Like I didn't have to get any of them. Like I put the thing out, like the little house out, and there they were.
How long did that take?
I put it out in the spring, and they were there in the spring.
Oh, really?
Like they, because they were just in like cracks in the brickwork on the house.
Okay.
Or just like in a hole in a tree, something like that.
What were your parents' reaction when you said, "I want to start beekeeping"?
Well, I was kind of nervous to ask them because I didn't know how they were going to react, and I was like, "Hey guys, can we get a beehive?" And they're like, sure. Like it really wasn't like there wasn't any like pushback about
okey
it.
Okey-dokey.
Like, yeah.
Is there now are mason bees, do they have stingers?
They do, but they won't sting you because
they
don't have anything to protect like a honeybee colony does.
Okay.
Because they have to protect, you know, the whole. They have to protect their queen. But the mason bees, they just lay their eggs and then they die. Like the only way they would sting you is if like you intentionally, like you touch them, like you grab them.
Right.
But if you're just like, I've been up not closer than a foot, like my face closer than a foot from them and they just fly.
Why would you do that?
Just cause.
I'm not saying you shouldn't. Michael, I get the feeling you're curious about this.
Yeah.
Are you interested in beekeeping?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm always interested in beekeeping. It's one of my one dreams in my life that I wish I could have been a part of, except for I hate insects. It's the only thing.
That seems like that would be a drawback.
Yeah, I love honey.
Are there fellow beekeepers that you communicate with for advice, mm-hmm. or you know what are the, you know, because it seems as I've heard that there are rooftop beehives throughout the city of Chicago for people who want. Yeah, I know.
Oh.
I was surprised as well. There's somebody who does mead. They make mead out of the honey as well. So is there a community that you're in contact with constantly?
Yeah, I'm actually part of an organization called the Cook DuPage Beekeepers Association. So it's a group of all these people from the area who, you know, there's people like me who are just a couple years in, and there's people who've been doing it for 40 years.
Right.
So it's a huge resource, and there's meetings, you know, every month pretty much. And it's a great resource.
So beyond put, I know, isn't it? I know. I never
knew there was so much involvement with beekeeping.
I'm pretty sure if Griffin knew about this, I think that I'm surprised he hasn't already asked me.
He'd be in.
Yeah, he'd be all in. I know. I would. I'm sure it'd be cool about it. Sure.
Yeah. Why not?
Are there any other besides putting the housing for the mason bees? What else do you have to provide? Like, is there any sort of vegetation that is better for them? Any sort of flower or?
Well, for the native bees, especially, you want to plant like, you know, like prairie plants or like mm-hmm. just things that are native to here. But also probably my favorite type of mason bee is called the leafcutter bee, which They do the same stuff, but instead of using mud, they cut little circles out of leaves and they roll it up like parchment and fly away with it.
I was wondering who was doing that.
Yeah. Like if you look like a perfect little circle.
Have you ever seen a leaf with a perfect circle in it?
Mm-hmm. Mystery exposed.
Wait a minute. Wow. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So they make the hole so they can kind of grab it and roll it up.
Yeah, they land on the leaf and it's within 5 seconds. They just snip, 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 snip with their mouth and then they fly away.
I need to put a camera on my leaves.
That's amazing.
I love that.
Yeah, like I have this little plant out front and it's specifically they love it because it's all chewed up.
What kind of plant is that?
I have no idea.
I really don't know. See, because when I was more, before I had the boys, I had more time to garden. So I did butterfly garden. So okay. I planted like purple coneflowers and black-eyed Susans. And again, plants that are sort of indigenous to the area that might draw butterflies that would be in the area. I don't know that I would be hesitant to try bees, but I'm curious. Have you seen the video that's gone viral of the woman that says her soulmate was this bee that was in? Have you seen this?
Yeah, the little bumblebee.
It's a little bumblebee and she like takes care, it's injured. Stop and it just like it. Cuddles with her and like, oh yeah.
Yeah, she's just like holding it, just crawling on her hand.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I have to watch this.
Michael, you seem suspicious of this.
She befriended a bee?
Yes. She found an injured bee in her garden, brought it in and helped nurse it back to health, and he just hung out with her.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
It's very sweet. It's a little fuzzy bee. Do you ever try to get that close to a bee? No.
I'm afraid of getting stung.
Wait a minute. I'm so confused. So... So it's a good thing he put the headphones on. So do you, you said you have a friend where you also keep honeybees. Mm-hmm. How does that sort of relationship work with your friend?
Well, I asked them because I bought the bees and I bought the hive without a place to put them. So initially I asked a church nearby and they were like, well, you need to get like insurance that covers up to $1 million. So I left.
I
was asking around and I asked my friend and she said, you know, I'll talk to my parents because they might want it in their backyard because they have like 20 apple trees, nice big piece of land. And so I ended up going to their house, talking to their parents, and I'm friends with their parents too. And it's there now.
So is that the kind where they have like the big, the stacked, it looks like stacked wood, sort of the crates almost?
I actually have I'm not using that one this year, but I have a different one. It's basically that laid on its side.
Okay.
So that the one that I'm using is called a top bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like think of a feeding trough for like pigs or horses or whatever with slats of wood on top.
Okay.
And then the bees build down from those slats of wood. They build the honeycomb off of that.
Oh.
Wow. And then are you able to then, I guess, have honey?
Yeah, I haven't gotten it this year or last year, I guess. Because you don't want to get it the first year because that's what they eat over the winter.
Well, that makes sense. Now, I'd heard that, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but if you consume honey that is pollen, you know, the byproduct of bees in your own community and from your own area, it's better for you for your allergies.
Yeah, that's what
heading into allergy season. Is it? That's something you're familiar with?
Yeah, it's something I've heard. I haven't tried it just because I don't really have allergies, but I've suggested it to many people.
Brag about things like that. I don't know.
You know,
well, because you're supposed to do it, I think, before like the allergy season hits, and I always forget to get like regional honey.
Yeah.
And so this has been a particularly bad, bad allergy season for people.
Horrible.
I've got to remember to do it. I don't know if it's too late in the season. I'm not sure. We have some questions from listeners, both about the. Does a mason bee produce consumable honey?
Mm-mm, no, they don't. Farmers do use them, though. They use them for pollination, though, because they're about 70 to 100 times better than a honeybee for pollination. But no, they don't produce honey. They just get the pollen and nectar from the flowers, make it into this little loaf to feed to their baby, and that's it.
Okay, there he goes. If anyone has more questions, I believe that Ricky is ready to answer your questions. Ricky Geezer joins us in studio. He is now fighting a Illini. Very excited for that. We'll talk more about the bees, and I know some people have questions about the schedule. Before I go to the break, someone's asking about Dr. Dingman. On the nights that we are on until, on the Wednesdays when we're on until 1 a.m., we will have Dr. Dingman on, I believe. We have to talk to Andrea. The thing is, Andrea's on vacation, so I do have to work with her and find out and, you know, sort of get a feel for what she envisions envisions our show being like, but we will find a place for Dr. Dingman. For those who adore him and for those who don't like him, chances are there might be a little bit less of Dingman. I don't know. We'll see. More after this. Give us a call or text us at 312-981-7200. Again, the number is 312-981-7200. More with Ricky Geezer and Jen Zanotti when we come back, and I will go over the schedule again. More after this. Michael's just looking for songs that have the word honey in it. I was waiting for him. I'm like, there's got to be honey in here somewhere. Producer Michael Heideman, again, demonstrating his extraordinary executive producer skills. Joining me in studio is Jen Zanotti. She is our jujitsu expert and Motivational Monday expert. And are you motivated to start beekeeping as a result of our conversation with Ricky Geezer?
I want some honey.
I want to know if you want to keep bees. I kind of want to be a beekeeper, but your father was telling me off the air the reason that you don't have the bees at your... Did we say that on the air? It's because it's not allowed in your community.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So in your neighborhood, they don't allow bees, because I think that some of the... I live in a suburb and have houses upon houses. Are there hives that are acceptable to those types of areas?
It really depends, yeah.
On your community.
Like... In the town that I live in Carroll Stream, you can't, but...
Even though your dad's in the Chamber of Commerce and the trustees, it's still...
Seeing what we can do.
I'm just saying. Rick's like, could you stop? But you were also... Oh, wait, we have a listener who wants to join the conversation. Hi, Daniel. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. What do you want to say?
So we were just... We're school friends of Ricky's. There's a bunch of us listening to him right now.
Oh, Danny
and,
Weber.
We were just wondering... Hey, Ricky, what's up?
Hey, Danny.
Hey.
So we were just wondering what kind of beekeeping opportunities you'll have at University of Illinois next in the fall.
Oh, look at that. Great question.
I'm not exactly sure about beekeeping itself, but I'm pretty sure they have hives on campus or in the area. But currently, I'm actually working on an internship through the university.
Oh, wow. Sweet.
And so like what we're doing is we're going to urban and suburban areas and surveying native bee populations. So not the honeybees necessarily, but like what I was saying, like the mason bees, the leafcutter bees. And we're seeing like what's in the area basically by season in different types of gardens. And that's an internship through the university.
Now, Daniel, you also are a beekeeper?
No, I am not a beekeeper. I'm a pianist.
Oh, like those are two separate things. Like you can't do both or something. Oh, that's cool.
I wish.
Well, thanks for calling, Daniel. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Thank
you, Ricky.
See ya.
See ya. Another listener wants to know what you do with your bees during the winter.
Well, with the honeybees, my philosophy with the honeybees is they've been doing this for millions of years without us. So why do I have to butt in?
You're not intervening, right?
But basically, like what the honeybees do over the winter is they get in a big ball around the queen and they shake to keep it a nice 72 degrees in there.
Really?
And then they just move through the hive eating the honey. Like I said earlier, they just go through eating the honey.
Oh, that is so cool.
It's nice to be queen.
It is.
Yeah. And the native bees, I just brought like those little houses. I just took them off the front of the house and just put them in the garage.
Okay.
But you don't really have to do anything for them because, I mean, they lay the eggs and then they come back next year.
And how would you encourage, what would you say to people to encourage them if they have any sort of inclination to try this? What would you say to them to motivate them to take the step?
To take the step to become a beekeeper and do that? Well, it's our future, you know? Without them, we don't have food. We don't have chocolate. I love chocolate.
You know, I'm with you on that
coffee,
one.
All that, you know, all your favorite foods, they'd probably be gone.
All right.
And I want to say I read 2/3 of all food that we produce, we depend on bees for it.
Well, let me take a quick break here, and I want to wrap up with you, and I also want to say congratulations on going to the University of Illinois, the greatest university. I'm just saying. I love it. It's going to ruin you for life because you're going to have so much fun. More after this. And I mean that both with, like, school and everything. So congratulations on that. More after this on 720 WGN. We've been hanging out with Ricky Geezer. He's a beekeeper and now fighting Illini, which I'm very excited about. Jen Zanotti, do you think you're going to check with Highwood and see if they allow beekeeping in your community?
I mean, quite possibly. I think I have to.
I think I have to as well. Yeah. Now, Ricky was telling us about bees and the fact that there are so many, that there are certain types that are indigenous to this area, including mason bees. Somebody asks, what about bumblebees? Where do they tend to live?
Bumblebees, there are species that are native to here. Mm-hmm. There are species that are native to Europe and Asia. But the ones that you see around us are from here.
They're from here. Yeah. Excellent. And how many buildings in Chicago have beehives on the roofs? If that's something I think that I'll have to look into and ask somebody, because I don't think you have that information.
I know there are quite a few, but...
No worries. We will find that out. By the way, yeah. Michael, did you see the text that wanted you to know that without bees, there wouldn't be any pickles? And also, I believe they're also the same texter that wanted you to know that Sonic came out with pickle shakes.
I saw that.
Pickle shakes.
Biggest news of the year.
Oh my gosh.
I have to have that. Okay, so before we'll do pickle talk later.
There's always time for pickle talk.
There's always time for pickle talk. Mm. Michael and I
love
pickles.
Pickle Kool-Aid.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the pickle Kool-Aid coming up.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Since we're all here.
If only bees made pickles, so that would be like the perfect combination between the two.
Do you guys drink pickle juice?
I do. Okay. Yes.
Great for muscle recovery.
So okay. Yes, so do I. And the thing is, now I'm aching for it. So that's the problem for me. I love pickle juice. But there was a video on, did you see this, Pam? I think Ez saw this as well. I tagged Michael in it. There's a recipe you take, you strain the pickles out of the elastic jar, the Spears. You take Kool-Aid and a cup of sugar. You mix up the Kool-Aid. I think it's like cherry Kool-Aid. Uh-huh. You mix that up. You pour the juice back into the jar. You put the pickles back into the jar. You tighten it. You put it in the fridge and you let them ferment for a week and you have like these bright red pickles that are sweet and tangy around the table. Jen, yes or no? Yes or no?
No. No. I saw the color and I'm like,
Rick Geezer,
oh
no. Rick Geezer, no. Yes.
Give me a bite.
Rick Geezer is. Are you in? She's in. How about you, Michael?
I'm totally in.
Yes.
How about the bees?
Esmeralda?
We used to do this when I was younger. We would, but we didn't do it like you. We didn't like let it all soak in and ferment. We would take, you know, those giant pickles that you get from the little candy store on the corner.
Yeah.
You know, Van Holten's, I think is what they're called or something. We would take the bag. We'd take the pickle out, pour like dry Kool-Aid and sugar in the bottom of the bag, stick the pickle back in, dig a hole in the middle of the pickle out and fill it with this Kool-Aid and then eat it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Gosh.
So, we
went to a fish market, and I can't tell you what happened to all that after with the smell of the fish with the pickle and the sugar. And oh, my gosh.
Okay, but here's the important thing. All that, all notwithstanding, how did the Kool-Aid pickle taste?
It was good.
See?
But I was a kid. A lot of things were good back then.
See? Oh, that's as we're doing Kool-Aid pickles.
The color of those pickles, I was just like, oh my goodness,
like
I don't know.
That's all. Yeah.
I'm
all
in. That will clear your mistakes. With the rivers that burst their banks straight to the sea, what could you do? A peregrine blue. Yeah, peregrine blue. What could you do? Peregrine blue. Yeah, peregrine blue. You're listening to music by Ian Moore, who joins us on the lines performing at Fitzgerald's in Berwyn Wednesday, June 13th. Ian, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Where in the world are you right now? Are you traveling? You on the road?
I'm actually in Springfield, Illinois. I just drove 13 hours from Texas to get up here, so just get out of the car.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, are you staying in Springfield, or are you going to keep going driving the rest of the way?
We're playing here tomorrow night, and then playing Chicago, Fitzgerald's Berwyn the next night, and then Rockford, and then heading back. It's a quick kind of whirlwind trip for us.
But you're doing a great Illinois sort of, I like that circle you're making. Okay, because we do have listeners in Springfield, I just performed stand-up comedy in Mason City actually just this past weekend, and we have a lot of listeners down there, so let's go ahead and talk about where you're going to be tomorrow night then, too.
We are playing at Bar None tomorrow night in Springfield.
Excellent.
It's the second time I played Springfield in probably 15 years. I mean, typically we head up and, you know, hit Chicago, and then we'll hit Detroit, hit St. Louis, and moved through the Midwest pretty fast, so we're pretty psyched to be actually playing, you know, here and playing Rockford, where we have a bunch of friends. We're friends with all the Cheap Trick guys, so that's always really cool to come into to that town, too.
When you come into a town like Springfield, I mean, you know, I've been on the road for a long time, and I like to find something different, something new, or what's unique about that town. Will you go out, hang out around Springfield tomorrow, or are you just kind of, like, hunkering down until you have your show?
Yeah, I mean, tomorrow, I mean, we just had a pretty much of a doozy of a drive, but
yeah, he did.
Definitely my ask is to get out into the town and do it. There's a great Graham Nash autobiography that I listened to while I was touring Siberia.
Sure.
And he was saying, I know, isn't that a great entrance to saying it? You know, that's why I toured Siberia, so I could say I toured Siberia.
And listen to Graham Nash, yep.
Right. And he's talking about, you know, he's talking about, you know, I'm realizing that I might never come to these towns again.
Yes.
So I really want to get out and feel the spirit of the town. And I actually, as a general practice, do try to do that. My main focus is on the show. And
sure.
And so whatever I can do to get ready for the show. And if that means hanging out, walking around, or it means sitting in the hotel and trying to pretend I'm not on the road, whatever that takes.
Right, whatever mood you're in tomorrow, and that makes sense. If you have any interest, and my listeners are going to go, please, Patty, enough with President Lincoln, but if you have any interest, okay, if you have, the presidential library is spectacular, and just the...
Yeah.
Oh, you have? Okay, so there you go. So,
yeah.
And the Old State Capitol as well?
I have, yeah.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of all... I mean, that's... I've been doing this. It's crazy because everybody looks at me, they're like, there's no way you've been touring that long. But I've been touring for 30 years. So I pretty much, it's pretty funny because, you know, I hang out with a bunch of bands that are in their 20s or even, you know, 30 years old or whatever. And they're like, yeah, man, the second time we went through the States, I'm like, second time my ass. You know, I've got a zero behind that and maybe another zero too. I don't even know, you know.
I love it.
So, I mean, it's fun. There's a lot. The thing is, as you know as well, and really anyone knows, I mean, because the adage goes a lot deeper than traveling, there's a lot of juice when you squeeze a little bit harder. There's always something to experience in town.
Alex, I agree. If you do have a chance, if you want to grab a beer, I love Obed and Isaac's microbrewery over there in town as well.
All right.
I'm just saying, yes. And
I'm going to tell you what we're doing. We're doing tomorrow. We're actually having a band field trip, and we're going to go see the Han Solo movie in 3D.
That's fantastic. I have not seen it yet, so I'll have to follow you guys and see if you happen to post anything on Instagram or in your social media giving us the yay or nay on that. I'm gonna need that as the outcome of your field trip tomorrow.
I was a little suspect once Disney took it over, and when they started doing that thing where they spin off to the individuals, I was like, oh god, this is gonna get really bad. It's like the Chewbacca Chronicles, right? But then I had a lot of people, because I've been asking, because I'm curious. I don't want to, I really love Star Wars, and I don't want to be disappointed. So I've asked a lot of folks, and they've given me a pretty good thumbs up about it.
I have some friends that are also Star Wars fanatics. My friend Adam Selzer, who's in studio with me, who's an author and a tour guide. Adam, you can tell him.
I had a great time with the Solo movie.
There you go.
It's like an Indiana Jones movie, really.
There you go. So we have another thumbs up for you. Excellent. So tomorrow night, the band will be playing. Ian Moore is playing at Bar None. He's a guitarist and singer-songwriter. How many guys you got in your band?
We're a four-piece in this format. It's kind of a rock and roll thing. So drums, bass, I play guitar and sing, and I have another guy, guitar and keyboards. All four guys sing. So that's kind of like, I guess, our secret weapon. Mm-hmm. You know, is that we, you know, I feel like Archie Bell and the Darrells. I can't even talk. Archie Bell and the Darrells. Not only can we dance, we can sing just as like... I can't talk. Forget it.
That was a long ride you just had. No worries, my friend.
I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, no, I get it. That's the thing about driving to or from Texas. Like when I drove to Texas one time, we were so excited when we hit the border. Only we went, we were like, oh my god, we're only halfway there.
Yeah, the thing about driving to and from Texas is you're still in Texas the
yes.
whole time. You never leave. You could drive for a day and you're still there.
Yeah. It's insane.
It's a big state.
Oh, no. I was working with a comic named Tim Wilson. I'm not sure if you're familiar. My good friend Tim Wilson passed away a few years ago. But we were doing a gig in El Paso, and he didn't look at the driving time. I'm not kidding you, Ian. He was like, I'll just drive to we had Galveston the next day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We were all nervous. He had to leave.
Same.
He had to leave right after the show on Friday night from El Paso to get to Galveston the next night.
Yeah, he did. That's what's going to have to. So when we play Rockford, so we got this killer gig in Rockford. We're playing a blues fest the next night in Oklahoma City. We're going to do the same thing. It's like literally, I told my friend Polly, who's like, he owns Rockford. So every time we go in there, we're, you know, we just do all the stuff you do. Like you said, we do all the stuff in Rockford, right?
Yeah.
And I said, listen, the second we're off stage, you're throwing all the crap in the spinner, and we are literally going to be driving. I'm going to go, good night. And then we'll be on the road because we've got a 12 and a half hour drive to a huge show the next day. And, you know, and we can't obviously just show up and be there. That's the difference. People that aren't performers, because everyone's like, yeah, man, I traveled 12 hours one time. I was pretty tired. It's like we traveled 12 hours and then have to be brilliant.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a comic, it's the same thing. You got to walk up. You can't be like kind of dopey and like, oh, man.
Yeah. No. You
know, so we got on spot.
No, I used to take naps in cars, but I would always go to a church parking lot to take a nap if I was on the road. If I had to take a 15 or 20 minute, like, because when your eyes start closing, you got to take care of yourself. So, and with that, I want to make sure that you're safe on the road. I'm sure you are. You've been on the road long enough to know.
No, we're super safe. And we're, yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, I've been doing this for a long time and mostly drive during the day when we have to drive at night. You know, we're very, very aware. Not so much concerned about us, but more concerned about, you know, all the other people.
Yeah, exactly. So where are you playing at Rockford? I know you got, so wait, let me make sure everyone knows. What day is today? Monday. So Tuesday night at Bar None, and then okay. Wednesday night at Fitzgerald's. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, very excited. And then this place is called Mary's Place mm-hmm. in Rockford. I have no idea. Every time I play Rockford, it's a different club. I've never played the same place. Whereas Chicago, I play Fitzgerald's, I play Shuba's, I played City Winery last time. So it's kind of like I kind of do the same spots. You know
right.
what I mean? Like I probably played Fitzgerald's, I don't know, 5 or 10 times over the years, and Shuba's 5 times. You know what I mean? And in Rockford, it's just like, I don't know, they bring in a sound system and there's a place and it's a club.
Right. You know? Ta-da, there's a show. I love it. So Bar None tomorrow night in Springfield, Fitzgerald's on Wednesday, June 13th. You can also go see him in Rockford at Mary's Place. And thankfully, those, you know, once you are done in Springfield, it's only 3 hours from there to here and then just a quick hour and a half to Rockford. So that'll be some nice short trips.
We're very excited about that.
Excellent. And everyone can check out the music at ianmoore.com. That's ianmoore.com. Ian, it was a pleasure talking to you. We'd love to have you in studio sometime when you're available.
Love to come in. You
Excellent.
Guys have a great night. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Talk to you again soon. Be safe. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. Joining me in studio is Jen Zanotti. She's our jiu-jitsu expert and motivational Monday guru. I'm just going to use all different kinds of titles
for
you.
I know. I love it. Each time it's something different.
We need to motivate Paul to be available to come out to, you know, say goodbye to my favorite restaurant. He did not make it yesterday to Knife and Tine.
No.
I actually had texted him the night before, so he was able to plan.
That's not true.
I did.
You texted me in the morning.
No, did I?
Yeah.
No.
You texted me in the morning when I was already sleeping, and then I woke up late because I had a late show.
I was texting everybody as I could remember what I was supposed to be doing. I was coming in from Springfield and Mason City. All right. Anyway, you had.
I accept your apology.
So here's what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. I am, and I don't want to, if you had other ideas of what you wanted to talk about as far as motivation, because I think Ez was talking about this a little bit yesterday at breakfast about how to make healthier choices. Mm-hmm. I decided, you know, yesterday we had a great time at Knife and Tine. I had one of my last meals. I had my last meal we'll ever have there. I had my Nutella banana
so
pancakes.
That's what you had?
I'm sorry.
No, that's amazing. I know I saw the jar of Nutella in the back, but I mean, yes, I came a little bit late, so I missed.
Well, you were working out, and there would have been a lot of bad choices for you to make. I had a lot of great food, but I had more carbs than I've been trying to be better about carbs.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned something to Ez about like good fibers and good carbs and things like that. So my focus this week is to not have any sugar, no alcohol, no carbs. And if I do have carbs, it's in the form of like sweet potatoes.
Yeah, and good starches.
And not processed. Like I like Wasa crackers. Like it's rye.
Yes.
They're just made out of rye.
So right. You can even do like Ezekiel bread, sweet potato, quinoa, brown mm-hmm. rice, anything like that. We do need carbs and starches.
And quinoa also is a protein.
Yes,
I was surprised to find out.
It is.
Yes.
But you want it in combination. You always want to have protein, starches, and good fats together in your meal. Protein every time you eat.
Mm-hmm.
And eating every like 3 to 4 hours just to really keep your metabolism up. Small meals.
Because I asked you about intermittent fasting, which I do intermittent fasting in the sense that sometimes I eat
and sometimes I don't. Mm-hmm. Is that considered intermittent fasting? Is that not?
I mean, are you keeping the appropriate time in between that you should?
I don't know what these guidelines are that you're demanding.
Females, it's 14 hours. Males, it's 16.
Of not eating?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's an intermittent fasting.
So that's if you're doing daily intermittent fasting.
But isn't it also bad if you wake up and you don't eat for a while? Someone told me that.
Well, this is the thing. It's still very new, intermittent fasting. So even like through the nutrition course that I got certified in, there was the doctor there and he had done many trials with it. And, you know, he lost a lot of weight, a lot of body fat, but he's still kind of in the school of thought that it's not necessarily better than the traditional, like eating every 3 to 4 hours, where I think, you know, that more so brings up, keeps your metabolism going and you need to kind of fuel your body a little bit more. The fasting, there are, you know, pros as well, but sometimes people will wake up and eat breakfast and start the whole day.
That's what you're supposed to do. I don't do that, yes. But I always get, So what about this theory? Tell me if this works in this intermittent thing. If you eat a big meal right before you go to bed, but then when you wake up and then 4 hours later you don't eat for 14 hours
you
that
don't
total
eat. So
time
for men it's 16. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say theoretically you just have coffee when you wake up and then for 4 more hours you don't eat, so or 16 hours total, but you did have a full meal and it did include pancakes. Is that okay?
So,
survey says
we're gonna,
and also eggs and bacon too.
There you go. That could work. It's not a free pass to eat whatever you want in the time period. That's not
no
the
butter on the
hours.
Pancakes.
I mean, you know, I'll allow a little
really
bit like organic butter, have some fat in there.
That's carbs. But you said we need carbs.
You do need carbs. Okay. Yes. So you know.
But anything like white flours, anything with processed sugar, all of those are bad carbs. And and even and for some people,
pancakes
and
also, are white flour.
Yes, for the most part, unless you make
you
like buckwheat.
You can get like buckwheat, which are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. Pancake? Do they have that
really
at Golden Apple?
They might. I've been
to
restaurants.
Probably go to Trader Joe's or Whole Foods and buy some and make them at home for yourself.
Oh yeah, he's got Frango mints in his. Oh no, they're
those
gone.
Pumpkin so mango pancakes at Trader Joe's or something.
Ooh.
Actually, that's
they have pumpkin
I was kind of making.
They do have pumpkin.
Well, they have like 95 different pumpkin products in the fall.
Yeah.
Yes,
no.
Swift my soul to enter him. Be jubilant my feet.
That's a good point because I have buckwheat and I have pancake. I have pumpkin. Cans of pumpkin in my pantry, so I was just thinking I'm going to throw that in. It's good for you.
If I remove the pancakes, but you have a big meal, what if it's a let's say burrito with corn tortillas?
Tortillas are often made with what? With lard.
Okay, but then you don't eat. Let's say you eat that at night.
It's over that. See,
but then
tortillas
so
con lard con grease.
I want to say my only.
Sorry, I'm sorry. No. aren't I right?
Issue.
That they're made with lard-ish?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay,
she
sorry,
said,
everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is eating right before bed. Like, you never really want to, like, eat a huge meal and then go, like, straight to bed.
So wait,
so
like,
at least,
5 minutes?
Like,
oh,
wait,
that's so
like,
tempting.
An hour.
How about napping?
You can
you nap after a heavy meal? Here's what I made tonight. I made roasted chicken, roasted broccoli, black beans, and red wine mushrooms, and then I took a nap because I was so tired.
I mean, that sounds delicious.
I'm not sure if I was tired from the food or from standing in my kitchen for an hour.
Right.
I'm just like,
maybe
not entirely sure. Let's take a break here. 312-981-7200 if you have questions for Jen that are not whether or not you can have pancakes right when you wake up every day, or if you can have a big greasy
right
burrito
before you go to bed.
Yeah. Somewhere in the middle of that. 312-981-7200. We're also hanging out with Adam Selzer. I wanted to make sure he could come by. I'm trying to invite a lot of our regulars to come in studio this week because this will be our last week, we think. You know, are we definitely out of here by Friday? Because, like, we thought, I feel like we shouldn't be overselling this just in case things change.
We're going to have to see. They're going to have to forcibly remove me from the studio.
Yeah, there's going to be claw marks in the producer's booth. Michael hanging on. More after this on 720 WGN. Can we be friends, Jen Zanotti? Can we be friends?
Oh, of course.
Someone messaged me last week and said that I sing better than I think I do. I sang happy birthday to somebody. No, but I sang. There's a difference. So instead of like singing in harmony, happy birthday to you, I did happy, you know, I did like a different thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like I've heard you sing a little bit.
You know. Patty, don't sing.
She's going to sing on New Year's at the show this New Year's, right?
Oh,
that was part of the contract.
Yeah, I have to come this New Year's.
I have to go to the. Hopefully, we'll do the Filament Theater again.
Yeah,
we are hanging out with Jen Zanotti talking about food choices, nutrition. We were talking a little bit about carbs. Paul Farvar would like to wake up and eat a stack of pancakes and go to bed eating a big cheesy, meaty, greasy burrito.
That is over the pancakes partially now. True. The burrito part is accurate.
Okay. Well, and we were talking about carbs and fat and things like that. Mm-hmm. I was mentioning that refined sugars, white flour, those are all hard to pro- those are not good carbs. Good carbs are things like anything like you if you're going to have something sweet like I love oh you know what I make? Nice. I make date balls.
Ooh.
Yeah, I make dates. You put them in a blender with walnuts and then you have some
and you got like, your protein with the walnuts.
Exactly. And you estimate
date
you
balls.
Have date balls.
That's they're made a of band dates. That's playing a lot of
date balls. But you you roll them in the also in crushed walnuts, so you kind of have like a little crispy, yeah.
And that's a good natural sugar. Yeah. Any white sugar or fine sugar you want to stay away from. That's the worst thing.
Yep.
And a lot of times it's in a lot of like juices or things people drink, and right there you got to cut that out.
I do love making smoothies. Yes, Paul.
What about stevia? Isn't that a natural white thing?
Yes, it is.
Does that count as a good sugar?
Yes, you can use stevia.
Well, you run the risk of tasting stevia if you do.
I like it. I've grown to like it. I actually carry it around with me now, and you know, it's Annie's. They don't have it, so I put it in my tea and coffee there. So
well, there you go.
I'm healthy. Yeah, I've already done my part.
NutraSweet, all that. Stevia is good. It's a good alternative.
I put it on my burritos.
What a combination.
Put on my date balls.
Now where would you put that that Kool-Aid pickle concoction that I'm going to be making?
That had a whole lot of sugar in it.
That was a lot of sugar.
I don't mind that. I mean, the pickle, I love pickles. But, you know, speaking of that, I don't know where it was. I saw my mom in her fridge had bought some, I think they were like butter pickles or some, like the sliced pickles. And I look at every label all the time. I'm always, you know, looking at labels. I'm a label junkie.
Butter pickles. Yes.
High fructose corn syrup. Why is that in pickles?
No.
I mean, there's so many things
You're
that are
killing
in
me.
The foods we eat that are so not necessary. So
makes taste
like,
better.
Nope.
Corn isn't just pass. About everything you eat. You get a burger at McDonald's, there's corn in every ingredient. It's in the ketchup, it's in the mustard, it's
yeah,
in the buns.
Yeah, high fructose corn syrups and ketchup. Yeah. So, you know, really looking at these, just natural alternatives is a little bit better. Making sure that kind of stuff, that extra stuff is not in the products that you don't need.
I might start doing my own pickling. Somebody brought me pickled beets. Huh?
Very hipster of you.
I'm going to pickle and raise bees. Apparently, yeah, I am going to be.
That's very, yeah.
That's amazing. We'll have some honey, some pickles.
I'm saying all those things. As do you do pickling? I know you enjoy a lot of the culinary things.
I don't pickle my parents.
Well, I hope you don't pickle your parents, Jade.
Your parents do pickling?
That was great.
They have pickled before. They like to do canning stuff. They've canned peaches and yeah, they do pickles all the time.
And that, nice. By the way, I had read somewhere that people that like pickles are also kind of a digestive sort of like with the fermentation is also
like
good for your gut. I get, but it's like good for your gut or something like that.
Yeah,
because it's like
I've
fermented.
Heard that.
Yeah,
it depends on which one you do. Because if you do the one that you have to boil, when you do the processing, that canning process, those don't have the fermentation. It's the ones that you have to keep
the one
in the fridge.
Keep in the, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. What do you think about people who are doing like these apple cider drinks they think that helps with their weight loss?
Well, a friend of mine was drinking apple cider every day and she ended up, her teeth started cracking.
Mm-hmm. There's what? That. Yeah, because it wears
she
away the enamel.
Get
yeah.
Her teeth like.
Apple or just the cider?
Cider. Well, apple cider vinegar.
Apple cider vinegar.
It's
vinegar.
It's a vinegar. Yeah.
There was people will take that, you know, for their health. I mean, I do like turmeric. I do lemon juice and ginger every morning, but the apple cider vinegar can get kind of harsh. And sure enough, her teeth, I mean, she had to spend a lot of money on.
Oh my God.
I mean, they were just like, it was like so.
In addition
brittle.
To having to drink apple cider vinegar. Yes.
Oh, I tried it for a couple weeks. It was the nastiest thing. Because I thought I'd give it a shot. Huh?
I've seen the drinking vinegar that they've got at Whole Foods. Like, are you trying to frame me for something? Like, if you left this in my car, you could like tell the judge I'm capable of anything if they found this in there.
I like the taste of it on salad.
Apple cider vinegar. Yeah,
sure. That's also like a little bit. I mean, you're mixing with it probably with like an olive oil.
I also don't chug Italian dressing, you know?
It was nasty. It was. Michael, were you going to say something about the apple cider vinegar?
Oh, no. When she had mentioned that her friend's teeth started to chip. That's the scariest thing, because there was a time in college when I was really into sour Skittles, and let me tell you, I ate an entire Costco box at one time in 1 month.
Oh my
God. And I mean, I just got out of my house and I was like, freedom, I'm gonna eat all the Skittles I want, and my like mouth started to bleed. So that you think is good, there's always a breaking point, and that is a Costco sized box of sour Skittles.
What if you pickled Skittles?
Oh gosh,
that happened to me once. Wow. During Halloween, I ate way too many sweet tarts and my tongue started to bleed.
Oh no. Oh my god.
Wow.
Because you're eating, you're just kind of sucking on the sweet tarts, right? And they're so tart, and that all that sugar, and yeah,
so good.
So
oh yes, Paul,
The club I was at this last week was Zanies in Rosemont. They used to have a lot of candies, but you know, Patty, they have like the best green.
Oh, they always have candy.
It's great food, great whiskeys, everything. Things that, you know, you don't want to do. But all they had were Sour Patch, those Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah.
And there was like a bucket that they had for the weekend. And I was the only one eating them.
Did you eat the whole thing?
There was a quarter left.
Oh my goodness.
A listener asks, that's a lot of sugar. That's all the sugar. That's all the sugar you need for the rest of 2018.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't eat dinner, though, so I feel like that balanced out.
No, I don't think it does. A listener asks,
needed some protein in there with that.
You were asking about sativa?
Stevia.
Oh, that's the other thing. They're asking about Splenda, which is similar, but the thing is it's a chemical.
Splenda and NutraSweet, you want to stay away from Splenda. You'll see like also in the form of, if anything says sucralose, that's Splenda.
Well, the body doesn't break down Splenda the way, I mean, like at least with sugar, your body knows how to break that down. Whereas with artificial sweeteners, your body doesn't know what to do with it. Your organs kind of struggle with it.
Exactly.
Is what I've seen on television.
You just got to learn to drink stuff without sugar. I've learned tea and coffee. I drink it straight.
Just drink it. Yeah. Don't add anything.
It's on my bucket list to do it.
What was that, Adam?
Coffee is black like my heart. Putting sugar in it just seems weird to me now.
I can't put sugar in my coffee anymore. Yeah. When I did the South Beach diet years ago, which turned out to be a problem because I just would eat cheese and meat and meaty cheese and cheese and meat. But one of the things I did do was not take any more. I started out with Splenda, and then I read how bad that was, and that's why I'm familiar. Mm-hmm. I only do a little bit of cream. Now I actually just use a little bit of either soy milk or almond milk, and I try to make sure that there isn't any fructose or corn syrup.
I would do almond milk, coconut milk, anything, you know, an unsweetened form, because you can also get ones that have, you know, extra sugar in it. Agave is also a great natural
agave
sweetener.
Paul, I think agave would be good for you. It's kind of like a honey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I use stevia.
Honey, that it does have a lot of sugar.
It's already been approved.
It's a natural source.
Yeah. What's
stevia
approved?
Is approved. It's okay. Not sugar. It's not one of the bad ones.
I'm just saying, if you want to try it, if you're looking for something, and if you happen to be out and about and they have agave in those, they like some places will have it.
Yeah, they have it
in the bottle.
But that's not that's not better than stevia, though, right?
I would say it is.
It is. Okay. We'll go with that.
I'm kidding.
It is.
I can't bully your answer, Patty.
I thought I read
who's right?
Where it's like so processed.
Agave
is very processed.
Oh, agave is?
You'd have to get a really, but that's like anything too, a supernatural source. You know, I'd stick with no sweeteners if you can. Otherwise, go with stevia.
We can do
maybe some
limit
sugar from fruit. Natural sources.
I bought like that big box of stevia from Amazon, and now I just carry it with me, and when places don't have it, I just use it.
That's
and
what
it's
you use.
How about you mentioned turmeric? Do you take the supplements like in pill? Because I have like cinnamon and capsules and turmeric and capsules.
Yeah,
garlic.
So I take it in the capsule, or I actually get just turmeric.
Turmeric like powder,
mm-hmm.
and then
do it in like I'll do half a mug of water and kind of warm it up for like 20 seconds and put turmeric in it, mix it, shoot it back, and then I'll do lemon juice with
ginger,
like teaspoon of ginger.
Okay,
mix that, shoot it back.
Have you ever done one of those golden milks?
That sounds disgusting.
No, is that the turmeric with the milk?
Or yeah, it's with almond milk and yeah. turmeric, and you throw some ginger in there, you heat it up, and it's supposed to be like wonderful and tasty.
This, I pretty much do that just without the almond milk. I have my two little separate concoctions.
There's a listener who's basically doing a Lewis Black joke, only they don't know it. From the 773, there is no such thing of soy or almond milk. Lewis's joke was there's no nipple on soy. You're not milking it. But it, I mean, I don't know if you want to what you want to call it. What would you call it? Soy juice? Does that sound better to you?
Yeah.
But I think that what the reason we are drawn to it is because you can use it in ways that you use milk. So right. I mean, exactly. if you wanted to
substitute.
Yes. Hold on. Let me
alternative
milk definition. Let me see if there's a here. You know what's funny? Milk. For the 773, if you would like a definition from Webster's, an opaque white fluid rich in fat and protein. Okay, although this is goes to there. Oh, you could also exploit or defraud somebody, typically by taking regular small amounts of money over a period of time.
How dare you milk me?
That went there.
So there you go. Anyway, so I understand what you're saying. People get very upset about like milk substitutes, or if someone tries to eat, if they're vegan or vegetarian, they're like, if they don't like meat, why do they keep eating things that look like meat? Why do they have to have burgers?
Oh yeah.
Why? How does that affect you? Mm. Let people go and do their thing.
Let people enjoy whatever makes them happy. Everybody's body's different.
Exactly.
People can't process things the same way. So.
Yes, exactly. Let's take a break here. Do you need to run or do? You got to run. Jen Zanotti, go follow her on Facebook. You can find her on Instagram at Gen Z Beauty and the Beast.
Jay-Z Beauty and the Beast.
Darn, so I was so close.
One day.
I was so close.
One day.
Jay-Z Beauty and the Beast on Instagram and?
And JenZanotti.com.
For her beauty salon, for massages,
for
your chakra, for
jujitsu, and facials, waxing.
And you also do one-on-one consulting as well for people.
Yeah, wellness coaching, personal training, jujitsu privates.
Excellent.
Everything.
And we'll be doing jujitsu on July 8th, as I sent you the email. So we expect you.
I saw it.
Yes, I'm so excited. And you guys have to let me know if you want to come to my super fight.
Oh, that's right.
June 23rd.
Your super fight is on June 23rd. There were listeners who were asking about that last time you were here. June 23rd, you have a super fight. And people...
People can go to Grappling Games. They can search Grappling Games. I think it's grapplinggames.org, and they can get general admission tickets.
Let's get a table. I think we can get a table.
You can get a table on there. You can select Jennifer Zanotti as your fighter.
Okay, let's go do that. Let me. Hopefully, I think I'm good for that. 16 is a Saturday, right?
It's a Saturday.
All right, let's go do it. Let's go. Are you working on the 23rd?
I got shows, but it's earlier, right? It's like 4 or something.
It starts at 4. I don't think I go on until after. I have to be there by like 6, so I'm probably going to be on at like 7:30.
All right.
Yeah.
You'll be able to make it. Adam, want to go see Jen grapple?
I'm not sure I'm in town that day.
All right. We'll say more about what Adam and Paul are up to. Jen, be safe going home.
Thank you.
Or people who try to come at you ought to be safe.
Yes. Hold on.
Jeez, yeah, wait a minute. Sorry about that. All right, Jen, have a great night.
Thank
and we'll talk
you.
To you again
you
soon.
Too,
thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. We'll see you in the new space.
Yes, I can't wait. Oh, it's sad. This is the last time.
I know. Sorry. I'll take a picture of you right here. More after this on 720 WGN. My turn. Am I going to be, Jen, what was your question? Am I going to be able to do anything during the days? Yeah, we'll figure it out. Oh, me for wrestling?
Oh, no.
We'll figure it out. We'll talk. Jen Zanotti takes leave of us. We were trying to make plans, Paul. I said, well, it's, you know, just trying to, now that my schedule changes kind of, sort of, as you've turned all the lights off in the traffic shack.
They turned off on me.
Power's out.
The mystery lights in the traffic shack.
No, it's because they're behind the door. So the door,
the frame of the door?
Yeah, the frame of the door blocks the thing. So I think after a while, it thinks no one's in here. So then I have to just put my hand back there and then it turns back on. And sometimes I just get tired of it and I'm like, whatever.
It's very strange. It's a lot of things moving. Adam Selzer, you and I believe, unless you guys come back again this week, which you're welcome to, because this will be the last sort of stretching out, doing pretty late. And the last time, last week, will be presumably in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us.
Always happy to, yeah.
Thank you, thank you. And Adam, you are leaving on Wednesday morning for, you're now very deep into doing a lot of tours for high school students and grade school students. school students, aren't you?
I'm almost done with that for the season, but I've barely been home. I'm always traveling around with high schoolers and middle schoolers, showing them strange cities. And sometimes I've done the math. I have like 20% of their entire town on my bus.
Oh, my. Right, because depending on where they're coming from.
Yeah, some of them come from very, very small. I've had so many kids this year who were freaked out by escalators.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I could see that, because if you don't have like a mall.
Oh, yeah, you don't have one in your town, you know. Right. Well, if they're afraid of the escalator, that means their parents have done a good job in teaching them to fear and respect those escalators.
I agree. Do you have advice for parents who send their kids, let's go with, first of all, when you send your kid on a trip that's out of town, do you have any advice for like something that's happened that you've noticed that maybe could have been, would have helped that kid out a little bit in their adventure?
One of the main things is have them research the places they're going. Have them know what they're getting into, know what they're seeing. You know, I've taken a place like, here's Central Park, and they're just like, what's that?
Right.
And obviously, what you get out of a trip depends a little bit on what you put into it.
So maybe get involved with them a little bit. So, you know, go online.
You'll get their itinerary ahead of time. Uh-huh. You know, have them go through it, see that they know what they're getting into. They know what to be excited about, what they want to see.
Mm-hmm.
That can help a lot.
Help them get excited on some, maybe find what they, you know, maybe they didn't even know about something they were going to be excited about.
Yeah.
How about the parents who join you on the, what would you like the parents to know?
The parents need to know this is not your vacation. You are subject to the same rules as the kids. You just have more responsibilities. You do not get to exempt your kid from any of the rules just because you're here.
That's a really good.
Parents are a bigger problem, Patty, for me.
Well, that's why I didn't go with. Yeah. I was not a chaperone. You heard my story about how I stalked Griffins.
Yeah, lots of parents do that. They just kind of.
I didn't get in the middle. Like none of the chaperones knew I was there. Only three kids in Griffin's class knew that I was stalking them.
No.
Oh, I was wearing like all black. I was like all incognito
clothes. Yeah.
Yes, and what I would do is I would get to their destinations before they did, and then get out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, or like if he was there, like I saw Kermit in the Smithsonian. Griffin loves the Muppets, so I took a picture of Kermit, and he's like, "Where is he?" I mean, like Griffin was all in on it, and he was like, "Where is he?" And I said, "He's on the second floor over by the display." You know, about the humanities and history.
Speaking of the Muppets, you'll never believe what I got to do.
What?
We got to go back a couple of months. I've had a free night in New York, so I realized Weird Al was playing at the Apollo, so I quick bought a ticket. Ended up sitting next to a guy who runs toughpigs.com, a Muppets blog, and also happens to work at the Sesame Workshop in New York.
What?
So last time I was in town, he said, "Hey, if you're free for lunch, you want to come tour Sesame Street?" I'm like, yeah, I want to come tour Sesame Street. Yeah.
Come on.
So yeah, I got to go walk around the Sesame Street office and see where they come up with the show and everything. It was so cool.